Welcome to High Techies Podcast. I'm your host, Pramod Thakal. In the High Techies Podcast, we talk to a lot of entrepreneurs and leaders who are trying to solve the worldly problems. We talk on various topics from starting a business to finding funds to hiring and managing people. But most importantly, we talk about the actual problems they are trying to solve.
Now, on this episode of High Techies Podcast, I'm speaking to Derek Omari. Derek is a co-founder and director of operations at Blurp. Blurp is an audio expression platform integrated in Livestream, voice chats, and voice assistants. Derek, welcome. Derek, thank you once again, and welcome to High Techies Podcast. So let's look into what you are doing at the moment. Maybe let's begin with Blurp. You know, how did this idea start? And then, you know, talk through the challenges that you had to face in terms of creating this venture.
Yeah, I mean, Blurp has been kind of an interesting startup to do in Utah, right? So we're 3 states over from California, we're 10 states over from New York. You know, creating a consumer startup in Utah has had a number of kind of unique issues and challenges. But, you know, I'd probably start off with, you know, just from a first-time startup and entrepreneurs learning how to build a consumer startup, you know, there's a lot of kind of mixed signals you get from local investors and mentors. And, you know, I think with every entrepreneur journey, everyone kind of likes to share how they had their success. And, you know, here there's a lot of SaaS companies and there's a lot of real estate investors that have had a lot of success, and they like to share with us, oh, well, this is how you do it. And they're really hyper-focused on certain types of metrics and ways of funding and ways to kind of look at how to value your business. And what was interesting as we went through this journey, you know, we had our first kind of experiences talking to out-of-state investors in New York and LA. And it was kind of completely different experiences from all of our experiences early on as we talked with them. And they were able to kind of see the vision we were seeing. And they were able to value the same types of technologies that we were looking at. So, you know, that was, I think, a big lesson learned in terms of, you know, really trying to find people that see the future that you see. And as we were able to do so, we were able to find those people, and they were very quickly able to invest not only their time, but their, you know, obviously their money in Blurp. So we joined the Amazon Alexa program last year in June. And from there, it's been amazing to see the doors that have been opened and the opportunities that we've been able to have for us.
It's difficult to, you know, put people into the same ship when you have a vision and you share the vision, but nobody buys that vision. And being a first time entrepreneur, what is more challenging, like when in terms of getting fund or in terms of maybe hiring the first person on board? Like, what is more challenging for you?
Interesting. You know, I think, you know, Utah is a pretty entrepreneurial state. I mean, between everybody being kind of like cheap and frugal and always looking for coupons and discounts for everything, to a culture of, you know, a lot of people have a background in sales here because there, as maybe some people know, there's a lot of LDS or Mormon population here. So there's a ton of people that have kind of knocked on doors for 2 years straight and learned how to talk to people and start conversations. So it's an interesting environment in that way. And the reason I bring that up is when it comes to entrepreneurship, it was, in my experience, pretty easy to find people that are interested in creating something and making something of themselves. So I think from that regard, it's pretty easy to find people that are interested. I think where it maybe diverges is finding people that specifically, you know, I think that's like, you know, a lot of people fantasize about entrepreneurship and what that can be and what that can be you know, opportunity wise for them. But then, you know, when it comes down to the day to day of, oh, this is what it actually looks like, this is what the grind is, you know, I think less people are interested in that or willing to actually put in the work to do so. I think the hiring part is probably less of an issue. I think for us, at least, the finding funding and being able to run a consumer startup that obviously is not going to be making money for some time was an issue. And I think we were lucky. My co-founder, Aaron, he is a developer, and you know, he was the founder of Blurt. And, you know, he coded this from a college dorm room for 2 years while he was working, and then, you know, while he's at school, and then while he was working. And, you know, having someone that can kind of build a consumer platform, you know, essentially on their spare time is really the only way that we could have got this started in Utah. Cause you know, no one was really backing consumer startups at that time. So, you know, but, you know, even then, right, it was like getting the right mentorship and getting the right doors open and opening our integrations to new places. That was, you know, a real function of talking to the right people and having the right connections there. And as soon as, you know, we, like I said, once we started joining the Alexa program and starting pitching outside of the state, that's when all of that kind of happened. And today, you know, it's a completely different story in terms of opportunities for Blurp than it was a year ago, primarily because of the funding that we were able to close on.
How do you want to reflect now? Like, you know, you've gotten to a certain point now, and I'm sure there were some challenges as far as, you know, getting to this stage is concerned. Like, you know, you said you got the fund and you started working on it, and perhaps it's much more bigger now, you know, from where you started. Can you maybe reflect on other challenges that you had to face during this time?
Yeah, I mean, what was, I think, interesting for us as a consumer startup is, you know, how did COVID affect us, right? It is probably the big question. And you know, so, you know, taking a step back, Blurp is an audio expression platform that lets you enhance any moment with sound. And so our goal is to bring audio sharing to as many platforms as we can, and to make that really easy and seamless and a fun experience. And so, you know, our first kind of integrations were on text messages. So we have an iOS and Android app, and then we brought that experience to the iOS keyboard. But the next places that we looked were, you know, live stream entertainment, where people are already being really interactive and they're looking for ways to enhance their content. And so the next place we turned to was Twitch. And when we went to Twitch, we integrated directly into their integration store. So it's an overlay. And it was about 8 months after we had, you know, started on that development, we launched, and then, you know, it was very soon after that we were getting 300 installs a day. Mm-hmm. And it was just kind of exploding from there. And that's when we learned that, you know, live mediums are really where we can enhance moments best. You know, Giphy, which a lot of people compare us to, right? We're like, oh, you guys are like sound GIFs, right? And we think that we're more complex than that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, from a very simple standpoint, yeah, you know, they're not wrong. There's a lot of similarities, and GIF is actually on Twitch's extension store as well. But we're 10 times larger than Giphy because of the unique way that sound is able to enhance moments and not take away from them. It's not distracting. So when a player or a content creator is making content, they can simply enhance that moment with a sound, and the viewers are able to be a part of that. And so with COVID, right, we know that everyone was indoors. Everybody was looking for ways to you know, fill their time and to make new connections and to relate with others. And Twitch was a great outlet for that. And Blurp actually grew a lot during COVID through that. So from that standpoint, we were very lucky. I think where our difficulties really lied was growing a platform like ours is really relationships based. So we were blessed when we first launched Twitch that we were able to go to TwitchCon And we made a lot of really powerful relationships there. And those are some of our best users today still, that we talk with, that we chat with, and they give us feedback as we launch new products. And without having those opportunities to really meet people in person, we had to turn to, you know, outlets essentially where we would just direct message them through Twitter or through Discord or through emails. And, you know, I think doing those types of outreaches can be quite difficult. And so we were not able to create as many relationships as we might have if we were able to meet people in person and be where the streamers are and to talk with them and really be able to support those ecosystems. So that was kind of a unique challenge. Even though we were getting so much organic kind of installations, we weren't able to get as many of those relationships as easily as possible.
I was listening to your, you know, explanation about what Blur does, but at the same time, I'm trying to understand, how do you make money?
Yeah, great question. So, you know, there's kind of two answers to that, right? Like, there's how are we making money today, and how is the platform positioned for the future? And realistically, where is our investors most interested? Mm-hmm. So, you know, the first answer is today. With our integration with Twitch and live streaming platforms, the way it works is viewers, as they're watching content creators, are able to access our library, and the creators themselves actually choose which content can be featured. So sometimes they have our search on and they can access all of our database, or sometimes they actually just feature, you know, 10 soundboards and specifically handpicked content. And the viewer will look through that, find a piece of content that's going to match that moment. Like maybe it's like a womp womp, and they wait till that the streamer is going to die. The streamer dies and they play it, and it's a perfectly timed moment. And the streamer actually chooses how much that's going to cost. And so we take a small percentage of every one of those transactions. So that's how we're really making money today, is through that. And you know, we've been able to make over $500,000 for our creators through this method and through this technology. So it's been really amazing, right, to support the creator economy as these people are trying to go full time into streaming. A lot of our streamers are pretty small, and they're able to make a significant amount of revenue through Blurp. So that's the first revenue model that we're looking at. And we think that there's obviously massive opportunity. We have about 3,000, you know, monthly active streamers that are making revenue in this method. And the market, you know, supports over, you know, 450,000 partnered streamers. So those are streamers that, you know, have made the jump and either, you know, are part-time or full-time streaming and would be great fits for us. And that market will only grow. Mm-hmm. So from there, the full model that we're looking to support and what we're really excited about is premium content. So we believe that Blurp is going to be the place to purchase premium sound content, and specifically around the idea that creators are able to monetize their voice. So imagine, you know, these content creators on YouTube, on Twitch, even, you know, are the day-to-day celebrities, right? They're able to make a soundboard of their voice and monetize that on Blurp. And the way that is really valuable, right, is, so let's take a, you know, a celebrity that probably everybody knows. So The Rock, he's going to make 5 sounds on Blurp, and it's a premium Rock soundboard of him saying, you know, 5 funny things. And obviously we can create that exclusivity where, you know, if you're purchasing it, you are one of the owners that can have that. And it's very clear that, you know, other people are not able to access that. You are the one that can do that. And then they're able to share it through our integration. So when a fan purchases that content, they can share it onto a live stream platform, Discord, text messages, you know, Alexa, Slack, etc. And that distribution is where it makes that content really powerful. So we already have, you know, with Twitch, we have a lot of our Twitch streamers and creators making premium content in that it's, you know, a sound emotes of their voice. It's very similar in comparative to the emote packs that they're already creating. And this is what's used in their chat. this is what's used in their Discord servers, but it's a complement of sound, a specific sound content that only their top fans can use. And so we're really excited about bringing that experience to so many more places. And once again, that value continues to increase with every integration we get.
Does this audio sounds or audio bytes that you have, can that also be ads instead of just sounds? It could be ad?
So I guess that's the third model, revenue model that we look at is, you know, a CPM, CPC model. It's not something that we probably plan to turn on in the next 5 years, you know, just from a scale standpoint and really what we're looking at. But yeah, we absolutely think that, you know, sonic branding can be a huge part of our platform. You know, imagine searching for, you know, right now we're getting, you know, 500,000 searches for happy every day, right? And in the future, right, we're getting 10 million searches for happy. Well, McDonald's is, hey, we'd love to add ba-da-ba-ba-ba, I'm loving it, to that search result. And it's a sponsored blurb. It's right there at the very beginning. Someone clicks it and it goes ba-da-ba-ba-ba. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, this is associated with happy, right? And so people can start bidding on search terms on blurb and creating this really unique sonic branding content that can be promoted throughout our platform. So, you know, we are excited about that model, but, you know, we feel like we really want to focus on something like that when we have a lot of scale to attract brands and different publishers that would be interested in bidding on different search terms based on volume.
I had a privilege to talk to a similar kind of founder. I mean, in a similar space, I would say they're also into live streaming, and they're also, you know, kind of, you know, showcasing the brands in front of the streamers, right? So, you know, you have similar ideas, you know, in terms of what you're trying to do. Perhaps your idea is more indicated towards sounds, but they are more towards brand awareness and those kind of things in front of live streamers. So that's right. Yeah, it was interesting. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. Maybe we should connect sometime. I'd love to talk to someone interested in the kind of, you know, creator ecosystem, right? And how we're supporting creators, like making full-time jobs of their passions, you know.
They're called Instreamly. I will send you the link. You know, I spoke to the founder, and she also explained me the challenges, you know, as far as how they build a business is concerned. And that was kind of interesting to listen to her. And your story is also very similar, you know, talking to the live streamers and so forth. So, you know, I'm now curious towards the streaming industry. I'm not very big in terms of, you know, understanding the streaming market yet. You know, I don't understand the market. Can you maybe, you know, explain me a little bit about, you know, the market itself and what was the rationale beneath starting this particular journey?
Sure. I can kind of start with just some of the industry facts first, maybe, and then I'll give you my own insights into it and where that secret sauce might be. So in terms of the industry, you know, I like to look at the story of Twitch. So it started out with a guy named Justin Kahn. He created essentially a service for himself that allowed him to stream his life every single day. So Justin TV was the name of the business. And this was kind of in the .com area. But he literally live streamed himself every single day. And lots of people started watching. It was interesting. And people liked to watch it. And it wasn't too long after that he realized, hey, wait, other people could live stream too. So he opened up the platform to more people. They started live streaming. And it quickly became apparent that there was a lot of people that were playing video games that wanted to live stream. And that's when the platform kind of pivoted to what we know as Twitch today. So from a live streaming perspective, right, it really started from that understanding of, hey, how do I look into this, you know, see a glimpse into someone's life that I've never seen before, to be able to chat and communicate with someone in a really live and fluid way. And today, where I feel that, you know, the industry has gone, right, is almost every platform has a live streaming component to it. And a lot of people have felt really comfortable interacting with their favorite creators in this way. And it feels like you're a part of something. And I think that's something that is obviously through COVID has really shown to us that that's a basic human need, to be able to be a part of something, to support the people that you care about, and to see people in a way that, you know, is more genuine, right? You get to see them just chatting to people in their room, asking questions and answering questions and talking about how they're thinking through things. And that's something that people really, really enjoy. You know, where I think there's a lot of opportunity is, you know, I think Patreon CEO, he has a video I can maybe share with you later, but he talks about the creator economy. And, you know, I've always heard the word the creator economy, but I hadn't understood it really fully until I'd watched that video. And, you know, the key things that he kind of talked about is that, you know, during the dot-com era, you know, there was a ton of consumer companies that came out of it. Well, the next era right after that was this building blocks era for people to create businesses, right? So, you know, back in the day when you created a business, you had to make your own servers, you had to create all your own infrastructure, and it was really expensive to create an internet business. Well, AWS and, you know, Salesforce and all of these other platforms, essentially what he called is Legoize different components of a business that makes it very cheap and efficient for people to create businesses. And that allowed for people to start creating businesses very quickly. And obviously a lot of people made money from that. Well, he sees the next era as us Legoizing the creator journey. How do people take their passions and make a full-time living from it? And live streaming is obviously one of the biggest components of being a creator today. Even just Instagram influencers, they are turning to Instagram live to be able to chat with their fans and to be able to create those experiences. And in my mind, I think everyone is looking, how do we help creators monetize that part of the experience? How do we help them make the most of that? And how do we help the viewers to make the most of that? And for us, right, we've been able to validate very strongly that there's a huge opportunity to add sound as a way to interact with content creators. There are ways for creators to actually monetize their own sounds. And that's where, you know, Blurp is particularly focused, is being able to support that creator economy in a way that lets creators monetize their passions and lets their fans be a part of the experience. And so as more and more companies look to creators, I think, you know, as you've talked with a lot of other founders, they're seeing that same opportunity that, you know, the passion economy, the creator economy is only going to grow over time, and that, you know, companies are going to be able to support that and make a lot of really valuable technology for them as they continue to grow.
So is it an idea that, you know, you want to diversify the various content types? At the moment, it is just sound.
You know, as a company, we are very focused on the sound components of things. And we think, you know, similar to places like, you know, Clubhouse, right, that there are unique aspects to sound. And so I think for us as a company, we'll be very focused on the sound component of enhancing a moment and bringing that experience to a lot of other places over the next, you know, 2 to 3 years. But I do think that other opportunities very similar to us will be popping up, and they are popping up right now. I can name a few, but I think there's a lot of opportunity in the creator space to help creators make more experiences with their fans, where the fans are not simply just watching it, you know, like television. I think people watching TV today is going to be a very outdated experience in 5 to 10 years. It is going to be much more interactive. It is going to have a lot of opportunity for you to do it with other people. And so I think we'll start seeing those types of shifts in entertainment and it being a two-way experience.
As more companies embrace the advantages of hiring global talent, they are realizing that benefits are still very localized and constrained by national borders. That is, until our partner Safety Wing decided to do something about it. Safety Wing is on a mission to fix the problem of remote employee benefits by offering borderless benefits for remote and distributed teams.
Safety Wings remote health insurance works in any country, whether you live there or are just visiting. Add anyone affiliated with your company to one simple plan that gets cheaper as you scale, and customize your policy to make it perfect for your team. Safety Wings remote health allows company to offer equal benefits to the whole team, no matter where they live or are located. Your team is global. Their benefits should be global too. Go to safetywing.com/remote health to learn more. That is safetywing.com/remote health.
And as far as the company itself, like, you know, how many, if I may ask, like, how many people are actually working now for Blurp?
Yeah, so today we're at about 11 employees. About 70% of them are in the office, and 30% are remote in different states, Texas, Massachusetts, Tennessee. Yeah, the core of the company is here. We will be growing quite a bit over the summer as we approach our next fundraise. That's kind of the organization of the company today.
You know, the reason why I ask is because at this point in the time, like, you know, we are facing the crisis, you know, I'm sure there are challenges when you're looking at your team around and talking to them on a daily basis, even though we are, you know, 24/7 connected to the internet, but still, you know, meeting physically is one thing, and communicating with the people, and then talking to people, you know, almost virtually all the time. Like, how has that affected the working mode so far?
Yeah, it's been really interesting. So I worked as a consultant for a tech company in San Francisco for about a year and a half before I joined Blurp. Mm-hmm. And I was entirely remote at that time. My whole team was in New York. They did have a Utah office, but my whole team was there. So I worked at home and I loved it. It was great. And I was a big proponent of remote work. When I joined Blurp, and at this point, this is kind of my, you know, my first startup, but going into that, I think I quickly learned that, you know, companies have different stages. And I think for a startup, it's really, really important that you are in the same room and you are able to have those discussions that are so fundamental to the way that you're going to approach your business, right? You know, in good to great, right? It is that cross-section of what's going to drive your revenue, what are you deeply passionate about, and what can you realistically be number one at? And, you know, they talk about circling that concept, and that's what your hedgehog concept is. It takes a lot of time and a lot of conversations and a lot of syncing to make sure that you guys are looking at the same problem the same way and the solution is the same for everyone. And being in that office, it was huge for us. So we got that office, and you know, I think in terms of acceleration, that really started. We kind of chose as a team, just a founding team, there's essentially four of us in the office, that we were, you know, that we were going to just be COVID friends for that year. And we really didn't see anybody else but each other. So my conclusion on that is that, you know, I think that in different stages of different companies, there's room for hybrid models. And I think we're starting to see that. We actually work at home on Mondays and Fridays. So I'm home today. And then we're having everyone come into the office Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And so that, you know, I think having times for you to be collaborative and for everyone to be there and to make those relationships is still important. You know, having time to be able to do your laundry while you're working and to be able to, you know, for other people have families, right? Spend time with their kids, pick them up from school, make them breakfast, whatever it is. There should be time for that. There should be opportunities for that still. And so it's kind of, you know, sectioning off and creating opportunity for different times and places, I think is really important. But for a startup, I would never recommend an entirely remote startup. I think that would be very difficult.
Like you said, during the startup phase, you know, you want to brainstorm a lot of ideas, and as soon as you do start to do those things over Zoom, perhaps it's not a ideal option, because you know you'll get ideas, you know, at any point in time in a day, and you don't want to start a conversation, you know, starting a Zoom and then inviting people, and then people may have, you know, gone out already by then, right? So so within the workspace, at least you have a, you know, you are in the closest proximity, and perhaps it's easier to just communicate there. So yeah, I kind of echo what you just said, because I also believe that, you know, during the startup phase, it's kind of challenging not to have your founders around.
Right, right. I mean, I think there's kind of like, there's a lot of intangibles to being in the office, you know, as a startup, right? It's just random conversations, questions people are asking, you know, the sales team listening to the engineering team talk through a problem, sales team pitching in and be like, oh, I actually talked to someone that had this issue and this is what they said, right? And the, oh, wow, that's really interesting, you know, and just having those types of random conversations, I think, can really add value, and it's hard to quantify. You know, and then I think another component is just, you know, how specialized is your company, right? And I think as a startup, you're going to wear a lot of hats. I'd say you're pretty unspecialized at that point. But later, right, when I was working as a consultant, I had one job, I had one focus, and it was pretty easy to do everything remote. We just needed to hop on a phone call once a week. I report to my boss what I did, and we have a couple, you know, random syncs and meetings there. That's pretty much it. So, you know, until you're really specialized, it just doesn't make a lot of sense to have to jump on a Zoom call every, you know, 15 minutes for something. And you know, there are new technologies like Gather that's kind of fun, but that we've played around with. And it's, you know, it's still not quite the same as just walking over to the desk or eating lunch with your coworker.
Yeah. And then just saying, hey, can you step into my world and have, let's have a chat. Like, you know, you cannot say that over the
Zoom. Exactly.
As far as the operations are concerned, of course, like you mentioned, you have your role within the company, and maybe your co-founders have their roles within the company. You understand your roles within the company. You have a vision. You are chasing that vision. And you wake up, you know, early in the morning or whenever you want to, and then you work on something that is, you know, geared towards the vision. But how do you communicate the same thing to the people that they are going to work for you?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you know, I think, you know, vision is something it's really interesting. The first, the second company I worked for, their name is peak.com, and they have a really charismatic CEO. Her name's Rizwana Bashir. You know, she's this super, super smart lady. You know, they got funding from Eric Schmidt and, you know, all of the Silicon Valley investors, really well backed, and, you know, really ambitious vision, right, to bring this marketplace for tours and activities to the whole world, and to enhance, you know, to really focus on experiences as the key thing. And what really stood out to me and what I learned from her is every single time she interacted with the whole entire company, and at this point they're around 150 employees, I think. But when I joined, I think we were at 50, right? And every single time she interacted with the company, she would restate the vision, and she would also give examples of what that meant to her. And, you know, I would say it was like, you know, 2 years in that I was like, oh, wait, I think I get it now. And I think I get it. You know, it's like, and I look back on that experience a lot when I think about our own team. And it feels like, you know, to my co-founder, he really doesn't like restating himself. He doesn't like kind of, you know, anyways, like saying things that he's already said before. And I'm like, it is so, so important that we keep restating our vision and what we're doing and what we believe in. Because one, it is, you know, it does change a little bit still, right? We're still figuring it out. And two, you know, our employees are not thinking about it every single day in the shower, everywhere we go, on our runs, everywhere, like we are. And they haven't had all these conversations, these hundreds or thousands of hours of conversations that we all had in the office in the early days when it's just us three. And that's why it's so important to keep restating vision and to keep giving those examples. And one day it will click for every employee.
And I think it is a really hard challenge to do that, because even if you have a really strong vision statement and these other things, it still is not going to click in the way that it clicks for you. And as a result, every one of your employees cannot be true brand ambassadors of what your vision is until they get it, until they really understand what that means and what it doesn't mean. And recently we actually had like a little PR fire. And it was a direct result of not having very, very clear understanding of what our brand is. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that is something that we're actively investing in again. And as a content company, right, you know, these things obviously happen. There's a lot of things that, you know, we're user generated content, right? And so it's more important for us than maybe any company to have a really strong stance of what our company stands for. And anyways, we're trying to make that clear, not only to our users, but to our employees as they are going to be interacting with all of our customers, and they need to be strong advocates of what we stand for.
And how important it is to create the transparency between the leaders like yourself and the employees, because what I hear from a lot of employees is like, you know, our leaders are not very transparent, and, you know, we don't know what the decisions are made on the top, and we only hear the decisions, you know, we are not involved in the process. You know, of course your company is perhaps smaller now, and, you know, maybe it is the right time to ask this question as well.
Yeah. I think transparency is a funny one. I think every company wants to be transparent. I genuinely feel that that's the case. And, you know, I read like Art of War, right? And like Sun Tzu, he talks about like, you know, make sure all of your commanders understand what the goal is so that they can make the decisions, right? Like they're your generals, right? And I think that there's a lot of power in that. I think a lot of leaders understand that to some level of an intuition. And so that's why they think transparency is important. I think where transparency really breaks down and where we disappoint our employees is, you know, it's kind of what I've been talking about, where it the value of being in the office together is that you have these random conversations about vision, about how you want to handle a situation, and those things, you know, how are we going to handle this specific piece of content? You know, that is vision right there, right? That is what we stand for. And it's how we approach that conversation. It's how that evolved. It's, you know, everyone giving their inputs and talking it through, and what was the end result? And I think that is something that it's that conversation. Did we record it? Did we share it? You know, did we tell everyone we just had that conversation? That's where transparency really falls apart, is, you know, I think it's hard to remember what it's like to not know something. I think it's hard to remember how you got to something sometimes. And then to be able to take the time and energy to go back and explain that to everyone, that's really where I think transparency is most difficult. I think that being able to say something like, hey, we're going to be doing fundraising at this time, and we're going to be launching this new feature for this reason, and we're hoping to launch it here. I think a lot of people can accomplish that. And so, you know, I don't think a lot of companies struggle with simply being able to, you know, give dates and timelines. I think they struggle to be able to explain why they're doing those things and what conversations led to that. And I don't really have a good answer to how to do that, but I know that at Blurp, we're actively, you know, investing more time into, you know, town hall meetings where we discuss why the product roadmap is the way it is right now. We have open, you know, kind of anonymous questions for them to be able to do in company meetings that we could address those questions and make sure that, you know, if something we thought was clear, that, you know, someone can clearly ask, hey, I don't get why we're doing this. And I think, you know, giving employees obviously a lot of room to be able to ask those questions can create more transparency. And then I think on our end, as we're reporting, instead of just saying our times and dates, et cetera, we really try to say, hey, here's why we're making this decision. Here's the conversations that led there. So I think it's something we're going to keep on working on, but hopefully we can get better and better at it.
Some of the things that you said about, you know, reiterating the vision, that's one thing that stood out for me. At the same time, clarifying why you are doing certain features. I talked to a lot of leaders and entrepreneurs, and they told me along the same lines. But when I go into my consulting world, sometimes I doubt the people like who are leading the organizations truly know why they do certain features, right? Or why they are running certain initiatives. And the question about why is very important. And it when those questions are answered clearly, and I truly believe that, you know, people who are working towards it would be more motivated and be able to deliver it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the more they understand the why, I think the more you can get buy-in, the more ideas they're going to be having. You know, the idea of product marketing is something that's fairly new to me. And, you know, it's this idea that every conversation that any of your employees are having, they're gathering feedback, which helps your product become better. And then, you know, you get closer and closer to that point where everyone drools about, which is every user you get, they're going to share it with five friends because they love it so much. And product marketing is investing in, you know, every single interaction, gathering feedback and making sure you're delivering the best possible experience. And if your team does not have complete buy-in or understanding of what your vision is, when they have those conversations, they're not going to pick up those small details of like, oh, wait, this is not achieving the goal that we want. Like for us, right? Like we really focus on that idea of enhancing a moment. We call it a blurt moment. It's when a sound is shared at the perfect moment and it makes it even better. And, you know, to be honest, like sometimes people just share a fart sound and sometimes it's funny sometimes, but sometimes it's not, mm-hmm. and it doesn't enhance a moment. And so we need to figure out when are blurps being shared that are enhancing moments and when are they not? When are we onboarding users that is setting them up for success and that they're teaching their fans how to use the product in a way that's really going to bring out the best possible outcomes? And you know, if our team doesn't understand those things, they're not going to be able to help with that cycle of product marketing and helping us make the best possible product. So it's really, really important that we keep investing in that, and I think we'll get the best results from it.
The thing that I'm curious about now, like, is about how do you determine, okay, is at this point in time, this particular sound is appropriate?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's really an indexing solution, right? So like how does Google surface the best image results for your search query or realistically any search result on Google, right? You know, they have indexing on every single page on Google, and it helps them understand what content is this content. And, you know, it gives them clues about why this content is being received better than others. And Blurp similarly does a lot of that same stuff. You know, and I honestly, that's part of why we're so excited about what we're doing, right? Is if you search for sound today on Google, it's going to lead you to a YouTube video 90% of the time. There's not really a good sound search or specifically sound bite search, right? Small sound clips. And Blurp is really unlocking that technology. And so part of the secret sauce is indexing, right? What are the unique variables about sound? Very simply, you know, is it a quote? Is it a song? Is it a clip from a song, right? Is it DMCA free? What are the types of understandings about that type of, what kind of content was that made from? You know, who said it? How did they say it? Were they angry? Were they happy? Were they sad? You know, those are a lot of contextual things that we can start tagging and understanding. And then for us, which is really powerful, is how is that content being shared? Mm-hmm. In what environments was it shared in? In what timing was it shared in? And as we collect that data, we get more and more understanding of that type of sound. And when people are searching and they search for happy, do they mean I want to feel happy when I play that sound, or I want to make someone happy when I share that sound? And, you know, we tend to focus on the latter, but as we get more and more users and we get more and more integrations, that data sets become more and more powerful to make sure that we surface the right content the second you search it. And that, you know, sound is such a interesting, has so many unique things, right? It has tone, it has, you know, this different you know, relation in terms of the way that you feel emotionally. And then there's the other aspect, which is your voice, right? Your voice is so personal to yourself. And we're seeing a lot of people create sound bites of their own voice. And that's something that, you know, we're really careful about as people are doing that, and that it is so personal, but it can be also really, really powerful when people are sharing their own voice, or their own voice is being shared back to them and brings them back to a specific moment. So, you know, the answer is indexing and really looking at that. And then the next part that we're trying to solve is, how do you display sound, right? Like, I think that's something that no one really has done. And in terms of like, how do I look at a glance, 15 different sound bites, and at a glance, know what all 15 of those sound bites are before I click them. And so we're really investing in our UX and in how that is going to function for our users and how they can quickly get to the exact sound that they want.
My understanding so far was, let's say some streamers are, you know, let's say playing games or whatever, and then they say, you know, some nasty words, right? And when they say it, like, all of a sudden you also hear a blurb there. Is that how it interacts at the moment, or like, you know, I'm totally mistaken there?
Oh, yeah. So I mean, the way that it interacts on Twitch today, right, yeah, is that a streamer will be streaming, and then they'll have their viewers. The viewers will access our database, mm-hmm, through the overlay, and they'll find a sound, and then they'll pay to play a sound live on stream. So they will pay to time that moment whenever they see fit. And so, you know, we have lots of really funny moments that have happened as they do so.
That's more or less what I thought it would be, but then I didn't understood the payment part. That's mm-hmm, I think that's what I missed out, I guess.
Yeah, so I mean, that's one point, but I love what you talked about, right? Which is the idea that, you know, you can layer sound into specific trigger moments, right? Like, you know, we are working with a number of different voice assistant opportunities where, you know, imagine turning on your lights and being able to have a sound play, to close your garage and have a sound play. These, yeah, are all things that blurbs can perfectly enhance as well. But even from a gaming perspective, how do I trigger specific events with sounds and replace those types of events with sounds that I want, as opposed to the ones from the game? So, you know, those are definitely all in the roadmap and exciting parts of a more customized experience.
Right. So going forward, what's the future for Blurb and for yourself?
The future for Blurb is, you know, bringing the sound sharing experience to as many integrations as possible. We're, you know, going to be investing pretty heavily into API. We get a lot of requests to integrate Blurb into applications, right? Even like dating apps, mm-hmm, is one that's fun, right? Is, you know, there's a certain surprise element to receiving a GIF, because you have, or receiving a Blurb as opposed to a GIF, right? On a GIF, you see it instantly. You can view it anytime. But with a Blurb, there's a moment there. You press play and then it goes, it's Joey, and he goes, how you doing, you know? And it's a really fun experience. And so we're looking to bring that experience to a lot of new places at the end of this year. So that's really where the future of Blurb is. I think, you know, partnering with a lot of content creators. There's a huge NFT craze, right? We've been seeing over the last couple months.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, Blurb is really well positioned to be not only the premium sound marketplace, but also a place to have exclusive sound content. Like I said, how does a brand or a content creator create exclusive sound content? Well, Blurb is the perfect place, because when you create it there, it's also shareable. And that's what people want to do. That's the psychology of NFTs, right? It's that I'm the one that owns it and no one else does. And so, you know, Blurb is going to be on that space as well. So that's there. And in terms of myself, you know, I think, you know, we're just going to keep growing. We have our fundraise here at the end of summer. We're really excited about the content partnerships we're going to be focusing on and really focusing on getting some of the larger creator funds that are focused specifically on supporting that ecosystem is really where we're targeting, you know, some of the key investors that we want to work with. And then, you know, for myself, I think it's really just scaling up the team, making sure we got the right people in the right spot. you know, we're definitely excited about the future.
Yeah, I like the fact that you are thinking about different integration and Slack is something that I thought like it would be interesting, you know, not just sharing sound, but also having a deep integration, you know, with sounds and maybe different rooms within Slack. You know, this is going to be interesting, you know, if you're able to integrate within Slack. Just my out of curiosity suggestion.
No, we're definitely in the talks with Slack right now. You first got to get whitelisted, and then we got to look at how it actually interacts. But we love a deeper integration, similar to the way that Giphy's integrated to Slack as well. So, you know, we'll look at that roadmap as it comes along for sure.
It was a very, very wonderful conversation with you, because I get to learn about your platform. You know, like I said before, I didn't know anything about it, even though I try to play a little bit with your platform and try to search here and there what it does. And, you know, I kind of got what it did, but I didn't know in detail like what you're trying to achieve. And that was wonderful to just hear from you and learn what you're doing it and how you're doing it, right? It's interesting. And I would like to learn more in the future, maybe next year when everything settles down and hopefully we can travel again. You can travel.
Yeah, that'd be great.
You can come to Europe someday. And that would be interesting to know where you are at that point in time. Maybe you'll raise funds, you'll add more resources, and what kind of challenges that you will tackle in the future. It would be interesting to learn in future again.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's definitely going to be a big year, and I'll be excited to chat with you then, and when we do have your Slack integration and a couple of other fun ones too.
Thank you for joining, and have a wonderful day ahead.